All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. Socially Connected 360, number 29 is in the house. Hispanic Heritage Month. I got my main man, Jason Romero, lawyer, author, ultra marathon runner. I mean, you name it, has gone through so much adversity and still continues to conquer. Man, we're going to have a great conversation today. Number 29, Jason Romero, starting now.
This kid's going to be somebody better than anybody ever knew.
All right, folks. Welcome back. Welcome back. Like I said earlier, SC360 is back, and we're back, and we're bigger than ever. Number 29, I have my friend and someone I saw him on social media, and I'm like, man, we got to get together because his story is just powerful. Jason Romero is in the house, folks. Wait until you hear this. It's Hispanic Heritage Month, so it's a perfect time for this. Jason, how you doing, man? How's everything going? How's Colorado going?
Doing great, man. I appreciate having me on, Luis, and I was excited to get invited to your podcast, so can't wait to have a conversation.
Awesome, man. How's the weather over there?
It's beautiful. You know, we're just coming out of a balmy summer. I'm born and raised here and not used to these hot summers, but we've just started entering into the fall days, crisp mornings, and perfect for running.
Oh, man. Amazing. Real quick question. Colorado, cycling. How's cycling over there? I'm a big cyclist.
It's huge. Huge over here. We have all kinds of different cycling communities, and there's people who take it, you know, extremely serious. There's shorter distance. There's longer distance. There's everything. Mountain biking is everywhere, and road cycling is everywhere too. Big triathlon community. I mean, we just have a lot of active people here, Luis. You'll fit in great. Come visit.
I know. I told you earlier in the pre-show that I was talking to my girlfriend, and we got to get over there, man. It just seems so beautiful. And I mean, cycling, you know, obviously climbing, and I'm sure there's mountains and there's hills, and there's so much. You can get so good at cycling over there. So tell us about you, man. This is about you. I mean, I really look up to you. You know, this is Hispanic Heritage Month. You're a Latino that you know, we all look up to. You've overcome a lot of circumstance. Tell us about your life growing up. I know there's something that, you know, we want to let folks know today, and that is even makes your story even more powerful. You know, you're an author, you're a lawyer, you're an ultra marathon runner, but there's also something else. Tell us a little bit about your life, man.
Yeah, sure. Well, first and foremost, it's not really about me, because none of us get through this life by ourselves. The only way we get through it is with a village. And, you know, with me, there's something much larger than me taking care of me and watching over me. So that's number one. But what I've been able to experience in life, I think, you know, I have been blessed. I think I have a life and a story like anybody else. You know, I've had, you know, ups, downs, adversity, successes, failures, that type of thing. Kind of what, you know, I guess interest people in my story a lot is I have this disability. So I was diagnosed at a young age with this degenerative eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa in my teens. And I was told, frankly, I would be lights out blind by the time I was 30, forget about trying to go to school. Nobody in my family had gone to college. My mom told me and my brother, you're going to college, you're going to graduate school, you're going to break the cycle of unemployment, you're going to do something with your lives. And, you know, in my early teens, I was told, forget about that. You got this disease and you're going to be disabled. And, you know, I got 5 minutes if you have any questions. And that just, you know, wow. I think we've all had these types of circumstances. Like I call them dream killer moments in life. And, you know, they're kind of like when the proverbial, you can't do life, you can't accomplish your dreams. Well, we've all had this experience, but what ended up with me is, you know, as a teenager, and I don't know what you were like, I was pretty ornery, and that was a good thing for me because I didn't listen to this adult. And I went on and I pursued my dreams. I ended up actually getting through college, getting through law school, became a lawyer, you know, went on, you know, transitioned from being a lawyer to a business career, worked with GE for 10 years, ran GE Cap in the Caribbean, worked for, you know, Western Union, did global operations there and some different stuff. And then eventually, my eyesight caught up to me. And that's the crazy part of the story too, because when my eyesight catches up to me, I end up in a deep depression. And as a result of that, I took on a challenge to run across the United States. And that kind of launched me where I'm at now. Keynote speaking, a couple books later, and I could never have planned out this life, but I am so blessed to have gotten to where I am with all the ups and downs.
It's just amazing to think that at your lowest point, that you find the energy and find the courage to do something that most of us that can, you know, we can see, we have, you know, some of us have some glasses or things like that, but even with all that, the vision and everything, that we wouldn't even think about running or doing ultra marathons or even running across the United States. It just shows the willpower that you have and just the tremendous strength. Where do you get that strength from real quick? Like, where does that come from?
I want to let me answer that, but I also want to thank you for noticing a very important point, which was when I was at my lowest of low in life, frankly, I didn't know if I could go on in life, literally if I could go on in life, this huge challenge was placed before me and I accepted it and I took it on. That's a piece that gets glossed over in this story. A lot of people think of, you know, they look at the accomplishment or, you know, what gets reported on, you know, some blind guy runs across the US at 2 marathons a day. I mean, yeah, that was a big deal, but the bigger deal, I think, which you touched on is, and I learned, is even when we're at our lowest of lows, even when we don't think we can go on, even when we're bankrupt, when we're empty, when we're hopeless and helpless, we are still capable of our most incredible, incredible dreams. That's, you know, to me, if I can share that with my kids, with other people, that's probably the most important piece of this entire story, because, you know, I was clinically depressed. I went and sought professional counseling. I was really concerned about my own safety. Yeah, but I had 3 kids. I was divorced. I mean, I had to figure out a way to go on.
Yeah.
You asked what the motivation was. You know, this and the crazy thing, like, you know, with this story is this wasn't even really my dream, if you will. I always say that it was a calling to run across the United States. It's not like, you know, I was, you know, sitting in a depression, laying in bed for 3 months. I'm like, I think I should run from Los Angeles to New York, you know, tomorrow. Yeah, it wasn't that.
Everybody else.
Yeah, right? I mean, I need to be locked up. Probably need to be locked up anyway. But, you know, I was depressed. I went to see this counselor in order to do something to get out of my house, to take a shower. I had volunteered at a homeless shelter and I talked to the executive director. I was like, I got to do something, man. I'm spiraling down. And the executive director, a friend by the name of John Moorhead, told me, oh, come in and volunteer on Thursdays. I went and volunteered. And during one of my volunteer days of trying to help people, you know, who I believe were in a tougher situation than me, they inspire me every day. Mm-hmm. I had a calling, and, you know, I talk about it in a book I wrote. But this came from outside me. It wasn't even like my own thought. It was like, a thought was pushed into my head. I am going to run across the United States. And then all of a sudden I was like, what just happened? I've never experienced anything like it before or since. And I thought I was, you know, going crazy, but I knew it was for real and to happen. And in order to hold myself accountable, you know, I'm a lawyer. I could pick it apart and be like, oh, maybe my sugar level was low, or maybe, you know, something else had happened. I texted my mom immediately. I said, I am running across the United States to hold myself accountable. Like within 30 seconds, she texted back, said, I'm in. And that was the beginning of this, you know, basically what I call like a run for survival. I called it Vision Run USA, but as I describe it now, it was a run for survival.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, when you are in that moment, and there's nothing, I can't even imagine. There's nothing else. You're just like, the world is closing in on me. It's getting dark. It's going to get dark. And every day you wake up, you're like, it might be a little bit darker, or is it going to, how fast is it going to be? All the things that you struggle with. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to take on this tremendous feat that again, a lot of us would never be able to even fathom with our eyesight, you know, normal. So I commend you on that, man. It's amazing. There's a documentary I was checking out a little bit today. You also did a Puerto Rico run.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Just amazing, amazing, amazing. So you mentioned your mom. Yeah. So your mom says yes. And then what happens? I mean, does she full on double, like just go with you or planning, or how does that work?
Yeah. So what happened is I had this moment or calling, and all of a sudden I'm like energized. I was like, I'm doing this. And it ended up being 18 months from the time that happened until my actual takeoff date. So in between that time, I had to, you know, train up my body to be able to handle this. I had to try to fundraise, which didn't work out so well. Do a website, figure out the logistics, the route, try to get sponsored, you know, like everything that could go into it. And the other thing too is that it's not a race. This is like an expedition. There's not rules for how you do this. It's just going out there and trying to figure out how to do something. Yeah. So all of that took place over 18 months. My mom, really, her role that she was going to do was going to be to crew me, basically drive at, you know, 5 miles an hour across the U.S. in a sag wagon with supplies.
Amazing.
And yeah, and, you know, I'd run 50 miles and then we'd jump in the van, go to the nearest motel, and then, you know, she'd take me back to the start, and then we'd do the same thing all over again until we got, you know, from one coast to the other coast. You know, when you ask what my mom's role was, it was everything that I am. Since I was 2 years old, she raised me and my brother as a single mom working multiple jobs. You know, she taught me work ethic. What she taught me was what I ended up doing day after day there. Like, I mean, just imagine 50 miles on your feet day after day after day, no days off. That's basically grind. It's work ethic. Is just, there's times when you don't want to do it. There's times when you don't think you can do it. There's times when the pain is overwhelming, but you still go out there and you do it. And that's what my mom's role was, but that is a lifetime of just witnessing her and what she did and how she lived her life. And then we both went out and did it. You know, the incredible thing is she went out there when, you know, she was 69 years old. And she, for most people, they're doing speed crossings are like 50 miles a day or more. And there's less than 10 that have ever happened in the history of the world. Wow. Mine was one of those. With those speed crossings, people take crews of, you know, 4 to 7 people, and you have doctors, masseuses, nutritionists, you know, multiple vehicles, scout vehicles, bicyclists. All I had my 69-year-old mom doing all this stuff, and she was running across the road trying not. I mean, it's incredible. And it's not like this just happened overnight either. We did so much practice in the interim between the calling that, like, I had ran 600 mile or more plus races from the time of this calling until I took off. One of those was Badwater, which is a 135-mile race through Death Valley in July. You're in the desert. It's like 120 degrees. And Mama Cindy, that's what all the racers call her, she's crewing it. We go across Puerto Rico, 183 miles through, you know, humidity and rainforests and beaches and mountains and jungles and, you know, windy roads. Mama Cindy was the crew. You know, we stage our own 100-mile race at a local park with, all, you know, self-supported. Mama Cindy does it. We go to Greece and do the Spartathlon. Mama Cindy does it. So there was so much involved. And, you know, my mom is a wealth. Like, I wish I could have her on. I wish she could write a book. A lot of people go out and do crazy stuff or ask me for some advice. I always get my mom on the phone and people are just like floored. You know, my mom's like 75, 76 now. And she is amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, to think that, I mean, how far is that from one side to one coast to the other? How many miles is that?
My run was 3,063 miles. Yeah, it was a long way.
And again, this is why this show is important. There's somebody right now struggling with this, yeah. Whatever it is. It could be your eyesight. It could be, God forbid, a terminal illness. It could be something that could be terminal. I think what I'm getting out of this, and you're inspiring me, you know, we all have our struggles, is that you found a way to feel, and you're still doing it today, to feel alive again, right?
Yeah.
I could feel that from you.
We all, you know, I get on these podcasts, I tell this story. It's not easy for me to do this because it like rips off the scab, and I'm not immune to emotions. I'm terrified of the dark. I still have light perception. I can't see what your face is. I can see what there's movement and stuff. I look like I can see, but I can't. Like, I go to the eye doctor and they're, you know, you can't see anything. I'm like, get your hand out of my face. You know, I see fine enough to, you know, see what you're doing.
Yeah.
But what I've learned in this and in life and doing the speaking and putting out my story is everybody has a struggle. Mine's more obvious because I have a cane and walk around, but everybody has a struggle. You know, there's divorce, there's cancer, there's dyslexia, there's, you know, there's a gazillion different things. We all have it. We all have adversity and adverse circumstances. The thing that I've learned with these situations is it is a choice. It is, you know, attitude, you've heard it a gazillion times, but
yeah,
making a choice for what type of attitude we're going to have, it can happen in the snap of a finger. And that's the difference between spiraling or climbing and moving onward. And I can't express that enough, because to me, growing up, I always saw this eye disease as my biggest curse, like my nemesis. And I wouldn't talk about it. I had, you know, I had horrible circumstances, and I just tried to grieve it by myself for like over 3 decades, and it didn't work. And then finally I, quote, came out of the closet. I started telling people I can't see. I had to stop driving. I had to start telling people like I'm like legally blind. Like, I don't know what you look like. I've never known what you look like. Oh, and wow. People are like, you know, they're like floored. And then as I talk about my life, I'm like being my real self, like before I was, but I wasn't. I was an imposter. I was parading like a different person. I had shame that was causing me to not be my authentic self. Now I learned that. And the thing that I learned, Luis, was what I thought for over 4 decades was my biggest curse actually has become my biggest blessing, because I'm an extrovert, in case you can't tell. I love people. I love connecting with people. And by virtue of having this thing that has just, you know, hit me like a cannonball and have to deal with it and then talk about it, I've been given the biggest gift, which is an opportunity to connect with people as they're going through different things and share stories and walk side by side and share space with people as they journey on. Because we are the thing that we realize, or we don't realize, but we realize later on, is we've all overcome adversity. You know, when I talk to somebody who's going through something big, it's like the biggest thing at this moment, this snapshot in time. But when we talk a little bit deeper about life, we're like, well, you've gone through these other, what other things have you gone through in life? Well, you know, I've overcome homelessness. I've overcome, you know, dropping out of school. And then I went and got my GED and I went and got, you know, degrees. Whatever. You know, there's a lot of different things. So that's the thing that people don't realize, that the process of overcoming adversity is the same. And we exercise that as human beings all of the time throughout our life. But for some reason, we tend to diminish our past successes or our past accomplishments where we have overcome that adversity. And we need to be reminded a lot of times. And you know, that's a lot of the individual personalized conversations I get a chance to have. And that has been super special to me, because like I said, I mean, I get a chance to connect. And I got to tell you, Luis, if I wasn't some blind guy who ran across the US, I probably wouldn't have this opportunity. There's over, you know, 300 people in history that have ran across, and I'm the only one out on the speaking circuit. So I don't know. My curse is my greatest blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think, again, this is why this podcast, and for you to go out and tell your story, whether Forbes, all the news, agencies that have interviewed you, whether it's your documentary, your story needs to be told everywhere, all the time. So, because somebody needs to hear this, whether they're on the East Coast, whether they're on the other side of the world, because they're struggling. You know, we're all struggling, including myself, you know, and it's just powerful, man. It's so powerful. It's just amazing to me. Like when I saw your story, I know we were connected through a mutual friend, and I looked you up and I said, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Just simply amazing. But let's talk about that a little bit more. The running aspect of it, right? Because I said it 100 times on the podcast today, you know, a lot of us would never even attempt to run across the United States, but how do you train for this?
Yeah. So my strategy and training was to try to put myself through as much suffering as I could come up with. Mm-hmm. And because I knew whatever I would encounter when I was out there would be worse than whatever I could put myself through in training. So I hate the dark. I trained in the dark through the night. I trained on asphalt and on concrete, the hardest surfaces that I could get on, because I knew my body, I needed to develop bone density. Mm-hmm. I ran as many miles as I could. You know, when I first started in this 18-month training cycle, I was about 30, 40 miles a week. At the end of that 18-month training cycle, my longest training week was 300 miles a week. Wow. And I thought I was going to die. I mean, I was laid up. It took me probably like a week and a half to recover. I still did some running, but not like day after day. On the run, I was expecting 350 miles a week. I didn't know how my body was going to do it, Luis. Mm-hmm. And I put myself through intense suffering. I mean, you know, I ran this bad water race in the desert. I trained for that. It was in the summer in Colorado. You know, it would be like 100 sometimes. I would have 2 down coats, wool hat, wool gloves, everything black, 3 pairs of sweats. And I would sit out the pool with my kids and just bake. And all my neighbors are like, what are you doing? I was like, I got to run this race. It's going to be 120 and I'm going to be running. And you know, I'm just going to sit out here for 6 hours and cook and not try to take hydration in and just suffer. You know, my whole training was to suffer as much as I could. And I went through serious suffering. And, you know, true to my theory, when I got out there and I started running, it was harder than anything that I had ever put myself through. The pain was more intense. But the interesting with pain that I learned was we always hear pain is temporary, which is true. Mm-hmm. And pain plateaus. I talked to some other people who had done the run before, a guy by the name of Marcel Ulrich. He actually logged the 3rd fastest crossing, amazing man. And he told me when I was going out, he said, Jason, there's going to be a 2-week time period that is the break-in period. And that's basically the pain will continue to crescendo. You think it's not going to stop. At times you may think you're going to die, like it could kill you, but it will plateau. And true to what Marsh said, it did plateau. And my body, I just became accustomed and adapted to that level of pain. And I continued on. Anyway,
that's amazing. And so when you're in the moment, so you're in the moment, I'm sure, because I like I told you in the pre-show, I do some cycling. I was running. I did my last month in the Navy. I retired as a reservist. I did 7 years active. But my last year, my 21st year, I dedicated my last mission was in Florida, mind you. It was great. It was like 30 days in Florida. I was like, this is the best way to go out. I did a 5K every day. And wow. And I wasn't a big runner. You know, yeah. I was running with my girlfriend. She got me into running and we would run 2 miles, you know, in the morning time before work, you know, and I said to myself, you know what? And I used to put out motivational videos and I said, I'm going to do a 5K every day just to finish this and show people that I came into the military. I served our country and I came in strong and I'm going to leave strong, you know? And I did it. I wanted to quit. Like the 15th day, I'm like, I don't know if I can do a 5K every day. So I assume, and I'm asking you, you know, at what point did you stop thinking you couldn't do it? At some point did you say, am I really going to do this halfway or a quarter? Like how did that go down? Your mind.
First thing, thank you for your service, Luis. Freedom isn't free. So I know that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Second, to follow up, how did you do it? Or did I think I was going to quit? Yeah. In that 18 months leading up to it, every day I wanted to quit. On that 2 months on the road, when I was actually putting the feet to the pavement, multiple times a day, I wanted to quit. But like I said, this was a run for survival. My eyesight had gotten to a point where I did not know how I could go on continuing to lose it. I didn't know if I wanted to go on. And I had this calling from outside, from something higher, from God, if you will. Yeah. And when I accepted that, it was a transformational point in my life, because up until that point, I had lived life really for myself. Like, you know, I had worked jobs, been a lawyer, business guy. You know, I tried to get bigger jobs, you know, higher paying jobs, accumulate things, take care of my kids, my family, my community. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of Darwinian, like everybody else, you kind of got to fend for yourself. You know, I could do so much, but I can't do it all. Well, this was the first time this had nothing to do with me. This was something else that was telling me, you're going to do this and you don't want to. And I had to leave my kids for 2 months. Wow. I didn't work for 18 months. There's no income coming in. People die trying to cross the US. And I was going to do this with my little tunnel. And I knew that. And Marshall, when I talked to him, he told me that too. And he warned me. And he said, you know, I just about got killed. And you're going to be doing this like that. You're a grown man. You need to make a good decision, Jason. And, that was terrifying. Mm-hmm. So the point of carrying on, that the other thing that I learned after this whole thing happened and went down, and I reflected on it like after a year and in the writing of my first book, I came back with four principles that became so clear with every day, with every thought, with every moment, really, of that bringing me back, or resilience and not quitting. And there's four, what I call, pillars of mental strength, or the four things that kept me going and in the game, which was hope, patience, consistency, and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And hope, that's like at the forefront of it, which is akin to faith, and basically believing in something which seems impossible. Believing that something can be done when it hasn't been proven, there's no evidence. Believing some blind guy with skinny legs, middle-aged, with his 70-year-old mom and some sag wagon is going to be able to get across from coast to coast and survive. Yeah. But you have to believe. You have to believe it into existence. And I know, I've heard about the new age. Yeah, I'm going to manifest this. Well, I guess some people could call this manifestation, but it is, you have to believe, and you cannot let a crack in, because if you let a crack in, that's the enemy, it's the darkness, and it will shut you down. And that's it. You have to stay there in hope. Patience when the shit hits. Sorry about that.
Oh,
when,
you're it, good. You're good.
When it hits the fan,
I'm really here.
When it hits the fan, you got to be calm. What I tell people is, like, in that run and in life, there are storms, sometimes an hour, 3 hours, a day, 3 days. But what's the truth about storms? They pass you by.
Amazing. Yeah.
And when you're in that storm, you hunker down, you slow down, but you keep making progress. And with patience, blue skies will eventually come out, and then you'll start running again. And that's true with life. We always have setbacks. The stock market has a downturn. Guess what? It's going to come back, folks, and then we'll be running again. There's always setbacks. You can always make a comeback. Consistency is a third tenet, which that's critical for me. Relentless forward progress. That was my moniker, was Relentless Romero, and that I took to heart. Because I was like, I will be relentless in this. Like, I can get hit by a tsunami. I will get up. I will start going again. You just have to relentlessly and consistently make progress towards your goal on a daily basis. And that I've learned in business, in relationships, in athletics. If every day you're, I'm picking up piano. I have a piano in the background. Mm-hmm. And every day I'm playing that thing. But if you consistently make effort towards your goals, you will achieve consistent results. Inconsistent effort, you experience inconsistent results. And that's something that we all experience in life. It's, that's in business. We call that operational excellence. You got every day, you got to grind. You got to attend to those details, make that consistent progress. And that's about, discipline, rigor, work ethic. Thanks, Mama Cindy. But, those are critical. And then the final one is forgiveness. And that was huge. That's like kind of like the, mystical, metaphysical, whatever, foo-foo. But it's really, really powerful, because the thing I learned is, we all walk around with extra burden, extra baggage we don't need to carry. And I definitely did. For the first half of this thing, I carried all this baggage. And for 8 to 15 hours a day, I was in my own head. I was in isolation. I wasn't around people. At the beginning, people knew I had started. But then once I started going, everybody goes on about their lives. And I'm like, stranded on a deserted island trying to get across and survive. I was like reduced to primal instinct. I ate, drank, and ran, and that was it. Yeah. And with forgiveness, when I first started out, you go through your life story, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. I really got here. That lasted a day. And then the pity party began, and I was like, well, it kind of stunk that I lost that job, or that relationship failed, or why did I have to go blind? Or, you know, why did this circumstance have to happen to me? And I became the victim, right? And then it got really real. And I started looking at myself. I'm like, wow, Jason, you're not innocent either. You've hurt other people. And, you know, I've done things I'm ashamed of and I wish I never would have done. And I've never forgiven myself for that. And, you know, that's like when the layers of the onion get really peeled back and I'm just staring with myself. I'm like, wow, how do I really feel about myself? And because of my faith, I was able to forgive myself because I, you know, with my faith, I have been forgiven. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, if my God has already forgiven me, why am I trying to not forgive myself? That's ridiculous. Who am I? Am I bigger than God? No. So I consciously said, I forgive myself. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. It took me like 1500 miles to get to that point. And I remember because I had a GoPro and I used to record myself in the afternoon so I could show my kids, you know, how I started in the morning, how I ended in the afternoon. And yeah, on this day, it was about forgiveness. And it was like everything had been lifted. And I realized when I forgave myself, I was able to start unloading that baggage with all these other folks that had victimized me. And it started with my father, you know, leaving and all this stuff in this, you know, baggage I carried with him. So, you know, hope, patience, consistency, forgiveness. I lean on those whenever I get into a point where I'm like, I don't think I can go on or I'm going to quit. You know, that's in my grab bag. That's in my toolkit.
Just amazing. And thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles later, you have become this inspiration along with your team, your mom and everybody that's been with you, for many people that need it, you know, and need to hear it, need to see it. This is why, you know, I said this and I was thinking about this and I say this all the time. There's a reason why I wanted to get to the high schools and to the middle schools, you know, and tell my story. You know, the story of humble beginnings, the story of two parents that came here from Puerto Rico, that they wanted a better life for their kids. And the reason I wanted to do that is because there's a kid in that high school, there's a kid in that assembly that has my story, similar, and that is going to struggle the same way I struggled. And if they can see that even through all that adversity, even through the things that we make bigger than what they really are as a kid, and even as an adult, you get through it and look at this person in front of you. They have not essentially made it per se, but they survived it. And that's the same thing with you, but just on a super larger scale. It's just tremendously amazing. And so I commend you on that. So you mentioned your book. Love it. Love it. Love the title, Running Into the Dark. And you said those pillars are in the book.
Yeah. Well, they're in the book and then they're part of my second book, which is called The Success Cycle.
Like you're doing it on a nationwide scale, you know, as far as trying to reach people that might be suffering with the same, you know, issue you have with your eyes or even something bigger or something similar, you know, and, you know, I commend you on that, man.
Well, I commend you, Luis, because what you just said is paramount to what I try to do on a daily basis or when I do get up on stage. I started out speaking, I didn't just go to main stage keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. I started in schools at Kiwanis Club, the Optimist Clubs, anywhere. You know, somebody once told me, if you're a speaker, you got to speak. You may not get paid. You go free to fee, you know? Yeah. And that's what I did. And that's what I learned. What I realized in schools was there is so much hurt and struggle in our schools these days. And, you know, teachers are, even after COVID, it's gotten worse, but there's so much hurt and struggle in these schools. We got to get in there. And what I realized when I got up and told my story, I walked in, you know, I'm a jovial guy. You know, I walk in kind of, look like this middle-aged guy, you know, like who is this goofball? But when you get up there and you tell your authentic story, what kids realize is, oh, there's this adult up on stage. They look all put together, but they went through struggle just like I did. And I got to tell you, it doesn't matter whether they're kids, they're adults, who the audience is. I always get people to come up to me afterward. And because I tell my story in a vulnerable and authentic way, they feel compelled to share theirs with me. And I get stories of, you know, grown adults, professionals. I'm at a C-level retreat and people come up to me, you know, I've never told anybody this, but I was homeless for 5 years of my childhood. And I don't know, and this person is like, you know, decked out, like super handsome, should be like a GQ model. Yeah. And they're sitting there telling me, but those are the important stories that need to be told, because just like you said, We all walk around in this facade, and especially in this country, vulnerability and authenticity, it's talked about, their words are thrown around, but how often do you truly get to know somebody? How often when we meet somebody at a cocktail party, the first 5 minutes we ask, what do you do? We're sizing somebody up, or it's just, we're not great at conversation. We throw that thing out there. How about if we throw out a question like, what are you struggling with the most right now? And how can I do something to help you? Even if it's inconvenient to me right now. How often do we get to that question or that level within the first 5 minutes of conversation? That's what I'm talking about. If we are being our true, authentic, and vulnerable selves, that's the conversation that we can have. What I realized, Luis, is by doing the work that I do and doing these talks, those conversations, I'm able to have that conversation. And the first time I gave one of these talks, I remember I got off that stage. I called one of my best friends. I was like, I hate that. People said they liked it, but I hate it. I don't feel good. And my friend told me, being vulnerable is one of the scariest things that you will do, Jason, but it gives other people permission to be vulnerable. And I've taken that to heart. When I get up there, I don't enjoy public speaking. I'm like anybody else. You get me up on a stage, I'm in front of like thousands of people. Good thing is I can't see. So I'm like, looking at black, like a light beam shining at me. But being authentic and vulnerable, it is hard. But by doing it and doing it multiple times, I've realized I have connections with people I give a 30 or 40 minute monologue and I am able to connect with people for a lifetime, Luis. Yeah. It is absolutely incredible. And think about that when you're in a dialogue with somebody, if two people are truly authentic and vulnerable, a lifelong connection can be made in 5 minutes, but we got to be comfortable with doing that. And the way we're comfortable with doing that is exposing our pimples. One of the things that, when I go to schools, one of my slides is I talk about my shame and I put the word shame up on the screen and then I click a button and I always say the way for me out of shame was by changing one letter and I changed that M to an R. Shame became share. When I shared my shame, it was released and I was able to connect. I became vulnerable. I trusted other people and that is the pathway to connection. And frankly, if we can do that all the time, every day with people, that's the way we're supposed to live. That's a rich life. That's a life where we can make moments with other people. My theory has always been life is a series of moments strung together by time, When we connect with other people, those are moments. We remember those moments. What happens in between those connections, it kind of goes away. But when we connect, like what you and I are doing right now, I will remember this for the rest of my life because I feel something, like I'm feeling. Yeah. And that's what's special is this connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know. I don't remember who said this, but they said when it pertaining to public speaking and obviously doing what you love to do, they said, when you care about the people you're speaking to, it actually becomes easier because you're caring. It's more about them. You want to tell your story, but you want to tell them so that they can be inspired and maybe they can connect with you. So if you care about the people you're talking to and in that moment. And so that made it easier for me too. I mean, obviously I told you in the pre-show, I did run for public office. That kind of puts you in the forefront with town halls and the news and the media and debates and all those things. So I was scared every day, but I cared about the things I wanted to put forward. I cared about the people. Like I told you, I got in front of the high school kids and I wanted to tell my story because I care about them. I want them to not have the, maybe not have the same struggles as me, in their 20s, and not make the same mistakes that I made. And then obviously give them some of the tools, some of the advice that I wish I had, for instance, thinking about a lot of thinking, we don't do that enough. I told them, I said, at nighttime, just stop for 5 minutes, picture yourself where you want to be, picture yourself in that moment. Why? Because we live these fast lives. And before you know it, you're not thinking about the career that you want to do. You're not thinking about the entrepreneurship or the business. You're not thinking about maybe joining the military. You're not thinking about your grades. You're just moving at 100 miles an hour. And if you can put yourself in that moment, for a little bit, it keeps you somewhat or a little bit better focused. So not only just telling my story, but kind of giving them some advice of some of the things that helped me, and we've all done it. You know, I'm sure that when you were doing the 3,000 mile run, you pictured yourself at the end, and it might've, you know, gave you a little bit like, oh, I can't wait till I get this. I'm going to cross that finish line. And at times that pipe kept you going.
Yeah. Well, kind of like what you said, and I want to go back because I love what you said. You need to get back there and do what you're doing, because there's two things that strike me about what you said. One is you're not putting yourself at the center. Like, you know, sometimes people get caught, you know, they do something and they get caught up on this, you know, ego thing. It's not about that. Like you said, you know, my prayer always is when I tell the story is, don't let me be at the center. This is, you know, this is not some Jason thing, because like I said at the beginning, I didn't do this. I, you know, it takes a village, and there's something much larger that's going on there. But that is critical. And I commend you for that. I just, I think it's so special when people do that, because you care about who you're working with, man. And you know, what's critical in that too, is what, I always make a distinction with the word care, because to me, when we care about something, it's going to drive us into action. If we're just sitting here, you know, talking about something and we don't care, we're not going to take action. I call that curiosity. To me, curiosity has no place in my life. If I'm going to ask somebody to get involved in somebody's life, I have to be driven to action to somehow do something to help them. And you know what that means? That means even when it's not convenient for me, like, you know, I don't need friends of convenience who will help me when it's convenient for them, because frankly, the downs in life don't happen when it's convenient for everybody. It's not timed that way. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And when we go through it together, that's when we got to pull together and pull through. And, you know, I love what you're doing, and I hope you run for mayor again, man. I'm going to be Allentown and vote for you.
Well, hey, I mean, we'll see what happens. That's now in the background, and there's other things I'm trying to work on. But real quick, so let's get to this. I only have a couple more questions, but I want to get to this community, because I think a lot of times, whether it's the vision impaired community or the deaf community, and I'm just being frank, they get forgotten. And obviously, you know, that's wrong. I think we need to really, really include our deaf and disabled community in a lot of things. And we're trying to do it here locally even in the summer camps for the kids and things like that, where, you know, the police department is working on something for disabled children that they can actually be part of a camp, a summer camp. And we've worked with the deaf community, but let's get to your community, the visually impaired community. If somebody wanted to get involved in running or some type of sport or something, what advice would you give to them? Because it is a scary thing. I mean, you know, especially those that actually weren't born that way. You know, they in your situation where they kind of lost it gradually or they lost it suddenly. What advice would you give to your community?
So there are a lot of adaptive sports communities for the blind and visually impaired. Achilles International is one that is global. They have different chapters in different cities around the world, a lot in the US, and they have weekly meetups. So if people are running or doing triathlons or you want to do cycling, they do tandem cycling too. You go there and they match you up with a guide, and then, you know, you basically work with this group. There's a whole community. There's another organization called the US Association of Blind Athletes, which I'm a member of. They hold, you know, marathon championships. They have goal ball, they have beat ball, they have blind soccer. They work with Paralympic sports for the blind and visually impaired. There's another nonprofit that's called United in Stride. Mm-hmm. And unitedinstride.com. There you register yourself as a blind athlete, and there are guides that have registered in this. It's kind of like, wow, dating, but for a guide and a blind runner or a blind athlete, you know.
That's cool.
When this gut, you know, guides get matched up with athletes in a certain area. So I'm in Denver, and if there's different guides that are coming into town, I may get an email saying, hey, Jason, I'm in town. I'm going for a run. I'd love to guide an athlete. Are you up for a run? What distance, what pace do you do? and they reach out to me. So there are organizations like that. The other thing, there are adaptive programs all over. Here in Colorado, we have a ton, National Sports Center for the Disabled, which is out of Winter Park. All of our ski resorts have adaptive programs. I've spoke to different adaptive programs, Northwest Adaptive in the Northwest U.S. In the East Coast, there's tons of adaptive programs. So you just get on a Google search and look for, you know, adaptive sports for blind and visually impaired athletes. They're all over the place. They could also, you know, hunt me down and I will help, you know, bird dog for them. And, you know, you can get me at jasonromero.net. I have a contact place there. You know, knock yourself out. I'll get them connected.
And again, that goes for the non-visually impaired community, you know, to help, you know, our visually impaired community. And then, you know, obviously we work together. Like, that's just amazing that you would get an email and somebody would, you know, it's just a beautiful thing. It's just beautiful, wonderful. So this is a question that I ask all my guests. And we only have two more questions. So, this question is important to me because at 19 was kind of my turning point as well. It was one of those moments, like you mentioned earlier, that I kind of, if I would have turned right, I probably wouldn't be sitting here today with you. So it's a very important question. But if you had one piece of advice or some advice, knowing everything you know now, everything, and you could give it to your 19-year-old self, what would it be?
Hope. One word. And, you know, hope is something that we have control over. It's a decision. There's multiple levels of that answer, but it is never losing faith. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. And that's, you know, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can run your blind butt across the United States at 51 and a half miles a day. And that's, you know, that's it. You know, if you have faith in your child in that they can accomplish and become their best selves, and that's what you tell them day after day, and that's what you exhibit day after day, that is what will be. You have hope, man. And, you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, I've always believed in simplifying things. And if I could simplify a concept down to one word, you know, what would that be? And sometimes I'm asked, you know, what is your purpose? And that one word is love. And that's all that I try to do right now. And it is basically, you know, love my neighbor, love my kid, love my earth, love myself, love this planet, love this universe. But it is truly about love. If I can, when I wake up in the morning, I want to know that when my head hits that pillow at night, I have love relentlessly. You know, right now I'm giving you everything I have, Luis. I'm not thinking about other stuff. Yeah. Everything I have is here. Sorry for my attention deficit stuff. You know, I'm sure I have alphabet soup. You know, I know I'm obsessive. I'm compulsive. I'm hyperactive. But all that stuff comes in to make me beautiful. You know, they're not. And I always say they're not disorders. They're gifts. And guess what? It's enabled me to be who I am. I'm cool being the alphabet soup that I am.
We're the same.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I'm the same, brother. I'm the same. I love it, man. So there you go. There's a 19-year-old Jason Romero right now. They needed to hear that. Yeah, they needed to hear that you just got to have hope, man. You got to have a hope that things are going to get better, that you can still live that powerful story. And, you know, I mentioned this today in a post I shared because there's some issues going on all over the country with our young people. And I always go back to our young people. I know adults are going through it too. But it's okay to be the lone wolf and to want to live a powerful story. We're seeing a lot of young people just not having hope, not wanting to be alone, wanting to be with other kids, maybe a group that's negative or doing things in the community. But have hope, you know, that you can live a powerful story. And that's just perfect. I that's why I love the question. And I know a lot of other podcasters do it. They ask the same similar questions, but every time it just amazes me. And I ask it because, again, there's a Luis Garcia, there's a Jason Romero, there's, you know, a young kid right now that's going to watch this and be inspired by that. And so I love it.
One thing that you said as a follow-up, you know, when you're setting out to do something for the first time or you're breaking stride with the herd, you're being a pioneer, you're setting out to be unconventional. I mean, think about that. When you're that 19-year-old kid and you have a big dream and you're setting out and your family's like, no, you're supposed to do this, but you break stride and you go that way. You're a pioneer. You're an outcast. You're living an unconventional existence. You're going to get criticism. It's lonely to be a pioneer. It is absolutely lonely. But let me tell you what, 10 years afterward, once you've accomplished things along the way, all those critics come along like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? And the retort is, remember when you told me I was stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was crazy to go after my dream.
Thank you for there. That.
Yeah. And we were talking about this in the pre-show. You know, I say this all the time. It takes 10 years to become an overnight sensation. I'm like 6 years into my speaking career. I haven't even like peaked. And you know, one plug I do want to put like along that is my second book. This it's called The Success Cycle.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. The first book is, you know, this guy. I keep these by me on my desk all the time because sometimes I just look, I'm like,
show that again. I want to see it.
This one.
I love the cover, man. That's beautiful.
Running into the dark. But this one is about like it's a memoir on like the what happened. Mm-hmm. And then this one came about, you know, how it happens. This is like how you overcome adversity. And this one is dedicated.
They're on Amazon, right?
Yeah, both are on Amazon, you know, local bookstores, whatever you can, you know, order them off of Walmart or Target, Barnes and Noble, stuff like that. But the second one, The Success Cycle, in my dedication, I put this one, you know, to the pioneers, the dreamers, the outcasts.
I'm getting the book.
And that is why I put this, because it is so lonely to go out there. I remember, you know, I was a lawyer and everybody's like, you know, I'm doing good. And I'm like, I hate this. I'm miserable. I hate fighting. And I left. I'm like, I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. I'm going to go do this business career. And all my lawyer friends, judges, you know, family, they're like, you're insane. You're throwing away 10 years of your life. Guess what? Another 10 years after I joined GE, 10 years later, I'm the general manager of GE Capital, expat assignment, living in Puerto Rico. And all my lawyer friends are like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? How did you get a business? I was like, remember? It was the same thing with the run across the US. Yeah. I had this going away party and it was surreal, Luis. It was like, it was like I was at my funeral. I remember I had friends and family. They would just like stare at me like,
it's like
you're living a movie, man.
You're living like, a movie. You gotta do a movie on Jason Romero. Hollywood needs to come and get this movie because it's just powerful.
They need to get a
running into the dark. There you go, running into the dark. Are you kidding me? It'll be on Netflix. It'll be everywhere.
Anyway, I appreciate the time. You know, I could go on forever, but I appreciate what you're doing, Luis, and just keep it up, man, because it's a powerful platform. And I appreciate the message you're putting out.
No, absolutely. And so the books can be found on Amazon. We're going to provide all the links. You mentioned your website, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. It's jasonromero.net. And you can get a hold of me. You know, how I make my living now is doing keynote speaking. And I give seminars on overcoming adversity, really on, you know, this book, The Success Cycle. Awesome. So if anybody's interested, need a keynote speaker, or you know, you want to more of a workshop type on overcoming adversity, hit me up on jasonromero.net and I'd be happy to talk to you, help you out.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Just one last question. Any coaching going on? Like, you know, there's, you know, people like even athletes, you ever thought about doing anything like that? Like mental coaching, anything like that? Have you done that or?
Yeah. So I do that on an informal basis. I don't charge people for that. Basically, you know, once a year, I take on a project to help somebody do their first 100-mile run.
Oh, wow.
And that's something I've done informally. So, you know, through, you know, a variety of different things. And, you know, this year, it was a 22-year-old kid who goes to New York University. And May before, 50K was the longest run he'd ever done, 31 miles. And he was guiding me. I was doing the New York 100. It's 100 miles around New York City.
Oh, wow.
And he took a 31-mile segment. Poor kid about like went out on his feet.
Yeah.
1 year after that, he said, Jason, I'm going to run a 100-mile race. And so we went through that and he did the training. And 1 year after that, he ran the Keys 100. And there, you know, it was a 50% DNF rate. You know, people who start don't finish. You run basically from Key Largo to Key West. Wow. Super hot. It's crazy. Kid finished it. Wow. And I saw him just last week in Central Park. He's in his last year at NYU. And next March, he is setting out to cross America on foot.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the type of people that I try to get hooked up with. And, you know, that's the coaching I do. You know, I find Uber drivers, folks all the time. I had this one Uber driver, you know, we got into a talk and he was telling me about, you know, difficult times he was having. I was sharing my difficult times. And he said he wanted to do this podcast for mental health for men, but he'd had setbacks and different things. I was like, hey man, guess what? I wrote a book exactly on this. Meet me at the park and we're going to walk through this. I'm going to walk and talk you through this process. Awesome. Gave him a book. I, you know, page 143 has the entire process. I'm like, look, we're going through this. So that's the way I do it, man. Like I do it on an informal basis. I'm not, you know, I'm not a guy who's going to get like on a weekly meeting with people,
but
if people need help, I'm here to help and, you know, reach out, contact me. You know, I'm, you know, here until I'm in the next life. I'm here and I'm here to serve and love my fellow human beings. So reach out, please. If I can do anything to help you, your team, your family, your friends, your animals, just let me know. JasonRomero.net.
All right. Relentless Romero, number 29. There you have it, folks. I'm telling you, this episode, we're going to bring you back. We got much more to talk about. I want to talk about Puerto Rico. There's some stuff I want to talk about there. I went to Puerto Rico 2 years ago. Got a cool story on that. So we're going to bring you back. But Jason Romero, we're going to provide all the links, number 29. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jason, for being on our show.
And thanks, Luis. I appreciate it so much.
No problem. Like I always say, stay connected.